Good morning. My name is Doug, and I'll be your conference operator today. At this time, I'd like to welcome everyone to Vesta's third quarter 2020 earnings conference call. All participants are currently in a listen-only mode. And as a reminder, today's call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the call over to your host, Ms. Maria Fernanda Bettinger, Vesta's Investor Relations Officer. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Paul, and thanks to everyone for joining our call to discuss Vesta's third quarter 2020 financial and operating results. With us today from Vesta are Lorenzo Dominic-Beró, Chief Executive Officer, and Juan Sotil, Chief Financial Officer. Following the prepared remarks, there will be a Q&A session during which we will answer your questions. Yesterday, we issued our earnings press release after market close. This release is also available via the investor section of Vesta's website. Before turning the call over to management, I would like to remind you that this conference call includes forward-looking statements based on currently available information. Forward-looking statements inherently involve risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from those predicted in such forward-looking statements. These are included with our reports and filed with the Mexican Stock Exchange. In particular, significant uncertainty remains about the duration and content impact of COVID-19 pandemic. This means Vesta's results could change at any time, and the impact of COVID-19 on the company's business results and outlook is a best estimate based on information available as of today's date. Statements made on this conference call should be considered together with cautionary statements and other information contained within the Vesta's earnings press release dated July 23, 2020, and with the most recent regulatory filings for the discussion of those risks. All figures include hearing were prepared in accordance with IFRS and are stated in nominal of US dollars unless otherwise noted. I will now turn the call over to Mr. Bell.
Thanks, Fernanda. Good day, everybody, and thank you for joining our results call. The global economic environment remains tenuous, as I'm sure everyone in this call is well aware. In setting our Level 3 strategy early last year, we had anticipated that Vesta's economic and political environments would become more complex and challenging, although not to this extent. Nonetheless, we understood at the time that we needed to adopt a more defensive posture, building in higher levels of resiliency at our company. As part of our strategy, we reinforce our balance sheet and increase financial flexibility. Also, during the early stages of the health crisis, we paused the development of spec buildings with an emphasis on leasing up our existing property portfolio and, of course, lease renewals. Today, our focus still remains more on profitability than growth, as well as maintaining the integrity of our operations by carefully protecting the health and well-being of our employees and proactively managing risk. Vigilance is still paramount at every level of our company. These prudent measures, combined with Vesta's solid long-standing base of mostly global blue-chip tenants, mean we remain well-positioned to better weather the current crisis. It also means we continue to be strategically positioned to capitalize on the long-term trend of global companies consolidating their operations and either shifting them to or expanding within countries like Mexico. Our country continues to offer sustainable competitive advantages, such as its proximity to the United States, lower operating expenses, and abundance of skilled labor and engineering talent at low cost. In the meantime, our strong position is also enabling us to capture near-term opportunities such as the ongoing shift in consumers' buying habits toward more online purchases. This shift is expected to create more opportunities in markets where we own land that offers last-mile advantages, such as in Guadalajara, but also in Monterrey, a new geographic market for us where we recently signed another anchor tenant in the e-commerce sector. The signing follows that of Mercado Libre earlier in the year and demonstrates our ability to diversify in terms of geography and the sectors we serve. Our positive long-term outlook is tempered, though uncertainty remains. With differing predicted outcomes, it is clear the world has a long way to go to full recovery from the effects of the COVID-19 global pandemic. Despite Mexico's own complex political environment, our sector of its economy remains solid, with 95% of Vesta's clients now operating at pre-crisis levels, albeit evenly across industries. The strength of Vesta's tenant base is reflected in our solid third quarter financial results, which are tracking well to our revised full-year guidance. During our previous earnings call, we discussed granting rent deferrals for selected clients between August and year-end. I'm pleased to report that all of them have been fulfilling their obligations. Total collections of COVID-related deferrals during the quarter were 100%. In fact, at the end of the quarter, we had collected nearly 70% of total amount of deferrals. That said, uncertainty prevails, including the expected pace of the world's economic recovery, which could be hampered further by the growing momentum of the pandemic second wave, as can be seen in Europe currently. Another unknown is policy responses implemented by governments, which have varied country by country and even within each one. Consequently, tenants and prospective clients have remained cautious and are deferring leasing decisions, resulting in only moderate growth in new contracts during the third quarter. Nevertheless, our leasing pipeline is solid, while the supply of buildings across our markets remains limited, with low vacancies, helping maintain a healthy pricing environment. During the quarter, our leasing activity was 774,000 square feet, of which 105,000 square feet was new contracts with logistics and repeated e-commerce companies. 214,000 square feet in growth from new projects and 455,000 square feet of lease renewals. Maturity levels declined to just under 1% for this year and 6.5% for next year, 2021. The quarter's moderate leasing activity led to occupancy of 90.5% in our total portfolio, down sequentially from 92.3%. Also impacting our occupancy was the expiration of three leases in the Central and Bajío region that were not renewed, as well as two buildings from one client in Tijuana that were recovered through a bankruptcy. For both these buildings in Tijuana, the losses have already been accounted for in our provisions for doubtful receivables, and we are reasonably confident that the buildings will be released given their quality and location, as well as Tijuana's healthy market dynamics with record low vacancy rates. Although we suspended spec building at the second quarter, we still maintain an active development pipeline, a mix of pre-lease buildings, built-to-suit facilities, and tenant expansions. This includes two new projects during the quarter, one being a pre-lease 280,000 square foot spec building for a new e-commerce client in Monterrey, and a 44,000 square foot expansion for an existing client. That increased our development portfolio to 1.9 million square feet, nearly 72% of which is leased, and with an expected weighted average return on cost of 10.6%. It's important to note that this has been the strongest development pipeline with a very high number of pre-lease we have seen since the third quarter 2018, which underpins our ability to adapt according to market conditions. That leads us to NAV per share, which increased 4% versus last year. Regarding our third quarter financial results, revenues increased 5% to 37.5 million. Our NOI and EBITDA margins are also tracking guidance at 94.7% and 85.6% respectively. The margins reflect a disciplined approach to administrative expenses and the strict cost controls that we have implemented in the spring. Compared to last year's quarter, pre-tax FFO per share increased 6%, in line with the goals of our Level 3 strategy. Before turning the call over to Juan, I would like to highlight that we recently signed an agreement with a data center company that will purchase 506,000 square feet of land in Querétaro. A 4.5 million sale is subject to government sales licenses, but this is largely a formality. Asset recycling is a major component of our Level 3 strategy, although the focus is on our portfolio of facilities. The low-yield environment that still prevails across the world's capital markets continues to support cap rates in Mexico's industrial real estate sector. As such, institutional investors are still engaging us from time to time, and we look to sell whenever the right opportunity arises, but only then. As regards capital allocation, although our share repurchase program remains on hold in favor of cash preservation, we intend to continue providing a dividend based on our current performance outlook, as was seen also in this particular quarter. That concludes my prepared remarks for now. Over to you, Juan.
Thanks, Loren, and good day, everyone. I will begin with some detail on our top-line growth during the quarter. As Lorenzo mentioned, revenues increased 4.6% to $37.5 million in the third quarter. Much of this growth results from rental of a space that has been vacant in the previous year's quarter, while these results were partially offset by a decrease related to expired leases agreements that were not renewed. In his remarks, Lorenzo had emphasized the strength of Vesta client base. The resiliency of our business is also due to our mostly dollar-based revenue stream from export-related companies, which rose to just over 86% of total revenue, from 85% in the third quarter 2019. Operating costs increased 36% during the quarter due to higher costs at our occupied and rental properties, although mostly the former. Costs related to investment properties generating rental revenues increased 17%, mainly due to our allowances for doubtful accounts, which was $3.3 million at the end of the quarter and up from $2.9 million at the end of June. Nonetheless, it is important to notice that this cost decreased 22% from last quarter as a result from a decrease in the doubtful account provision as tenants fulfilled the delayed payment, as well as the favorable outcome of the legal claim against the tenant in Tijuana. Nevertheless, because of the economic climate remains tenuous, we are still carefully monitoring our receivables and maintain a robust collection process. Higher year-over-year operating costs primarily accounted for 58 basis points decline in our operating income margin to 94.7%, which was 180 basis points higher from the second quarter 2020, in which is helping us track our revised annual guidance of 92%. In absolute terms, net operating income increased 4% to $35.5 million. During the quarter, we continued reducing administrative expenses, which rose slightly on a sequential basis due to the peso appreciations, but decreased about 10% versus the last year quarter. That helped us increase EBITDA by 6.2% to just over $32 million, while the corresponding margin expanded 126 basis points year over year to 85.6%, which is helping us track guidance on this measure as well. Moving to other income, interest expense in the third quarter increased little over 9%, which reflects a higher debt balance than last year, although it is one with better terms overall. For the quarter, we reported a net FX gain of $7.7 million compared to a loss of $1.5 million last year. This shift is explained in yesterday's earnings release. The quarter gain on revaluation of our investment properties was $4.3 million compared to a gain of nearly $14 million in the last year's quarter. The smaller gain in this quarter was due to the higher vacancy level, the discount rate supply, exchange rate, and of course, a weaker economy versus last year. The smaller gain, although with the other factors I just covered, mostly account for the $1.8 million in other income. Our third quarter pre-tax income was $32.7 million. About 1% below the 2019 quarter, while pre-tax FFO was nearly 5% higher at just over $22 million. As Lorenzo noted, we have an active development pipeline made up of pre-leased buildings, build-to-suit projects, and tenant expansions. Although our third quarter capex was less than half last year's level at approximately $15 million. We continue to take a cautious approach. Further, we expect to finish the year with a solid cash position. At the end of the quarter, our debt balance was approximately $840 million, nearly all of which has a long-term tenor. 100% of our debt is dollar-denominated, and 85% bears fixed interest rates. Lastly, on debt, we finished the quarter with a loan-to-value ratio of 37.9%, while the net debt to EBITDA was 5.8 times. Moving to the asset side of our balance sheet, the total value of our investment property portfolio was $2.06 billion, up 3.5% from year's end 2019. The GLA of our total portfolio was 30.2 million square feet, with no additions during this quarter. Occupancy declined 180 basis points to 90.5%, due to the net negative absorption, as Lorenzo explained earlier. Our stabilized portfolio at the end of the quarter was 29.6 million square feet, while occupancy was just shy of 92%, which compares to 93.9% in the second quarter 2020. And finally, our land bank decreased 1.2% quarter over quarter, 41.3 million square feet. That concludes our review of Vesta third quarter performance. We'll be happy to take your questions now. Operator, please open the call.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now be conducting your question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star key. Our first question comes from the line of Adrian Huerta from JP Morgan. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, thank you. Good morning, everyone. Hi, Juan and Lauren. My question has to do with I don't know what you said, Juan, on the guidance. The NOI margin seemed to be in the first 9 months of the year approaching close to 94%. I think you have a guidance of around 92%. So just wondering what are you expecting for the fourth quarter and why not revising the guidance upwards? And also with that regards, operating expenses, which have been coming down on a sequential basis for the last two quarters. I assume that there are some expenses that are going to be back. But can you tell us just a little bit what has happened on the expense side and if there has been any cuts that are permanent or not? Thanks.
Thank you, Adrian, for the question. I appreciate it. Basically, because of our careful approach to accounts receivable, as I have mentioned in the past, we value a strong balance sheet above all. And as we have been marking to market, so to speak, our receivables since the last quarter of last year. That continued on the first quarter and had some more to do on the second quarter. I believe that we are comfortable with the levels of accounts receivable reserves that we have right now. In fact, that this quarter we have recovered some of our markdown receivables because of our efforts to talk to our clients, and that's a good sign, no? Under the current circumstances. So I believe that NOI will behave as on a more uplift manner for the rest of the year and indeed over the next quarter. As I always mentioned, COVID has been with us for 6 months, and we believe it's going to be with us for a little bit more. So we're going to be watchful. We're going to be watchful of any development. Collections are doing good, as I mentioned on my write-up, and so we feel comfortable with what we have been doing right now. As for the administrative costs, we have been incredibly strict over the last 6 months. We have adjusted our budget several times, and we will be very watchful to administrative cost optics. I believe that the gains we have made on expenses are largely going to be repeatable next year. We still need, the company's growing. Look at our growth rate over the past couple of years. We may need to hire a couple of more people, which is the largest part of my administrative expenses. We have stopped all hirings, as we said on the last conference call, but we're watchful of the stresses that we are making on our operational levels, and we keep a tight look at those, and we react accordingly.
But so we should not see the NOI margins behaving differently in the fourth quarter versus what we have seen in the first 9 months, right?
It's going to be in line. We're not going to be taking more accounts receivable reserves. So I think that they're going to be in line with this quarter. They may increase a little bit just because we stopped doing reserves on the middle of the quarter. So there's a couple of uplifts on the last quarter of this year.
Clear. Thank you, Juan.
Thank you, sir.
Our next question comes from the line of Vanessa Quiroga with Credit Suisse. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for that call. Hello, Lorenzo, Juan, Fernando, and all the team. My first question is regarding Tijuana and the assets that you were able to repossess. Where are they located exactly, and are you already getting interest from potential tenants? And I guess I would ask you if you would be willing to sell any of your assets in Tijuana, given how strong the appetite is. And the second question is regarding the data center, the land that you sold to the data center. If you consider this to be a one-time event, or would you be looking to do more of these transactions in your parks? Thank you.
Hola, Vanessa, and thank you very much for being on the call. Regarding your first question on the properties in Tijuana, we were able to repossess the two buildings from a toy manufacturer which went bankrupt during the year. These two properties are located in the Pacifico Industrial Park, submarket, which currently has an incredibly high occupancy level. And since we recently repossessed, we already have an important line of potential prospects to lease up the properties. It is important for us to, first of all, to as we do every time we recover a building, an empty building, we put it in shape, we have it ready, and then we lease it up. So we feel very confident that we're gonna be able to lease it up, particularly in a very strong market. As you know, Tijuana has been seeing an important increase in rents. Because of the lack of supply and the high demand. And I think that because of that, we're going to be able to capitalize with a potentially good tenant, a good lease, and a good leasing rate. One of the buildings was built in the last, I think, 3 years ago, so it's almost brand new. And the other one, it's a second-generation building, but we believe that the type of the building is going to be very well taken by the market, and hopefully we can have some good news soon. As to your question regarding sales, as you know, we have a strategy to keep on selling real estate assets, which is part of the level three strategy. We are currently analyzing what are the best options to sell assets, and definitely if there is an opportunity to sell and if timing permits, we will analyze if Tijuana could be also a potential area of recycling capital. We're open to that, and we have currently over 5 million square feet in Tijuana. And regarding your second question on the data center in Querétaro, we sold this piece of land, and we believe that we're going to be able to keep on selling more land, particularly for projects where we normally would sell only land if it's not a developer, and in this case it's a data center. It's not part of our business model to do a build-to-suit projects for data centers, which have a high complexity and high specialization, and they're normally tend to be, in some cases, 10 times larger investment per square foot. So, therefore, we believe that we can be capitalizing value to asset to land sales. It will not be a one-off transaction. We think that we can be repeating this business, but, of course, it will have to be limited so that we still have enough land for future developments for projects that we want to accomplish, which match our portfolio investment thesis, projects, build-to-suit projects or spec buildings, and I think that therefore we'll be limited at some point into how much land we might sell. But definitely we're going to see more of this. We see a very high demand of data centers coming into Mexico. This was already the trend was already before the pandemic, but clearly with the pandemic, there's just so much need for technology infrastructure in the country, and definitely data centers are the ones that playing a very important role in that regard.
Thanks, Loren. If I can follow up there, it's very interesting. If you sell more land, you think it will likely be in Querétaro, or are you considering your whole portfolio? And also, can you give us a range of that cash-on-cash return or any idea of a value over appraisal that you are willing to do this kind of asset recycling? And I guess, you know, a question linked to that is if you always will sell developed land, or are you willing to sell raw land? Thanks.
Sure, Vanessa, I will. I think it's important to be detailed on that. Remember that in Querétaro, we developed the Vesta Park Querétaro, which is a project of 100 hectares. We sold 5 hectares, which is 5% of the total project, which is a low number. So that therefore, we feel comfortable if we can be able to sell approximately 20% of that particular portfolio. We will still be in a good position to keep developing. And regarding so Querétaro, we think we have some land to develop, and we think that margins for land sales could be in the, let's say, 50% to 100% margin on cost. So in the end, I think that this is very profitable. Nevertheless, of course, the land that we have, its main focus is to be developed so that we can keep expanding our portfolio and keep on getting attractive returns through development. Are we able to sell land in other places? I think that we'll have to see a project by project, but definitely in markets where we have a bit more land than expected and does not jeopardize our development projects, I think we might be open to sell land at a margin.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Lorenzo. Thank you. I'll stay safe.
Our next question comes from the line of Carlos Terry-Longay with Bank of America. Please proceed with your question.
Thank you. Thank you, Lorenzo, Juan, for the call. Two questions, if I may. First one related to demand for new developments. If you could give us an idea of how demand is it picking up? Is it stable? And also, more importantly, if you could give us a sense or some color as to what is the region or country that you're seeing the demand coming from and what industry? That would be the first. And the second, if you could also comment on the lease spreads that you're achieving on contracts that are being renewed in the third quarter and this year, that will also be helpful. Thank you.
Hola, Carlos. Thank you for being on the call. Regarding your last question on lease renewals, the data that we have for this year for renewals is that we have been able to lease at a spread of 2.5% from the in-place rent to renewal rate. This is a good number. It's way above inflation, and remember that this is in US dollars. We have been able to renew 1.8 million square feet throughout the year. So we see this as a positive trend that the market is absorbing at higher rates and pretty much across the country. Secondly, regarding on your first question on new development, it's interesting how the pipeline on the second quarter when the pandemic hit was completely put on hold, and little by little the pipeline has been increasing from second quarter to third quarter, and we believe that particular pipeline will keep on increasing, particularly for end of the year, and a lot for 2021. The only thing that we have also been seeing is that there's a large pipeline that has that is partly following the trend from nearshoring opportunities as well as the USMCA being signed. We have seen that some of the projects or some of the companies have delayed their decisions to close transactions up to end of the year or even 2021. In our opinion, it's part of the pandemic uncertainty and the volatility that we are still seeing on the market. So I think that we have to be patient. We think that 2021 could be a very strong year, particularly if it considers that many of the companies that want to come to Mexico. And if you think about nearshoring trends, they don't make decisions overnight. They make an analysis, they make a study. It's a little bit longer process. We have seen that in the past, and therefore we think that a process of 6 months to 1 year is something that might be very normal. Regarding regions, clearly we see that, as I mentioned, Tijuana is currently one of the strongest markets. Particularly in even new sectors that have been arriving to Tijuana, medical device industries, as well as electronics, and also even e-commerce. And this is a similar situation to Ciudad Juarez, which has lower vacancy rates. As to the Bajío region, it is interesting that the automotive sector has recovered at a very fast pace. We believe that it's related to the backlog of production that was generated from the start when the pandemic started, and we have seen also a pickup in demand of car purchases in the U.S. However, there has been some adjustments in the automotive industry in terms of platforms, more focused toward SUVs and less towards sedans. So that will bring another opportunity, since there will be probably more suppliers that will have to supply for these particular new platforms. Currently, the automotive industry and the plants are at over 80% occupancy levels or utilization levels, which is a very good number considering that that they had to really stop at the beginning of the pandemic. So that's driving also good demand in the Bajío, and as I mentioned, I think that e-commerce is clearly going to be an important player, not only in strong markets such as Mexico City, Guadalajara, and Monterrey, but also we might be seeing more e-commerce projects in other regions in Mexico. We recently closed a deal in Tijuana for an e-commerce company, and we're pretty sure that there will be more leases in markets, for example, in the Bajío region or markets like Puebla, where there is also high demand and high demand for e-commerce projects.
Perfect. Thank you, Lorenzo. Appreciate it.
Gracias. Carlos.
Our next question comes from the line of Pablo Ordóñez with Itaú. Please proceed with your question.
Thank you. Hi, good morning, Lorenzo, Juan Fernanda. Congratulations on the results. My question is on the e-commerce front. Lorenzo, can you comment on the economics of duty projects in Monterrey and Guadalajara? Are they in pesos, dollars, what is maturity, and expected return on these type of projects? And also, how active do you see the pipeline for these type of tenants in the coming quarters? Thank you.
Sure, absolutely. I think that we have a very disciplined approach towards getting attractive and accretive returns on our development projects. We are still seeing returns in the 10.5% to even above 11% return on cost. That's something that we believe we might still see in the upcoming future. As you have seen in our development pipeline, we currently have a very high pipeline and 1.8 million square feet under development. And interestingly, it's 70% of it is leased. If you compare that number to last year, third quarter of 2019, we have half of the development pipeline, and we had less than 10% of leased buildings. But we had a more aggressive strategy towards spec buildings, and currently our strategy is strongly based on pre-leased buildings, and the sign of that is reflected in our pipeline. So it's interesting, and it is still a mix of dollar and peso leases. As you know, we're very careful trying to maintain a high level of dollar leases. 85% of our portfolio is dollars. However, we have a bit of room to take from time to time with great companies, some pesos leases too, as long as we balance out. But currently, our return on cost for the development pipeline is at 10.6%. We believe it's a great return on cost, particularly considering that there's a very low risk as to the leasing period and the absorption period. So we feel very comfortable, and we hope to maintain these good returns in the for upcoming development projects. And probably lastly is how careful we are at really getting great companies in our portfolio. We have learned from the past. We learned from some other deals, and I think that's making us being even more disciplined and not only lease because we need to lease. We want to make good lease agreements long term with great companies.
Thank you, Lorenzo. Very clear. And if I may do a follow-up question, do you think that this e-commerce opportunity is mainly focused on big metropolitan areas, or should we also expect to see the type of deals in secondary cities like Querétaro or Guanajuato, for instance?
Absolutely. I think that's the next trend that we're going to be seeing every time more. That e-commerce players do not want to be only Mexico City. They want to expand. They want to expand rapidly into other regions and other markets. Therefore, we have, and I'm glad that that we defined as part of our Level 3 strategy last year to have e-commerce as part of our portfolio. And I'm really happy that we have been increasing our portfolio, and we have extended our relationships with many of these e-commerce companies. And I'm glad that Vesta is currently being considered as a very important player in the e-commerce sector for industrial space. Remember that we currently have the largest e-commerce project under development in Mexico, and the other e-commerce players know that, and that's why they want to know where else we can be helping in their growth strategy throughout the country. and I'm glad that we're going to be able to do so.
Very clear. Thank you, Lorenzo.
Our next question comes from the line of Andre Mazzini with Citigroup. Please proceed with your question.
Yeah, good morning, Loren, Juan, Fernanda. It is on the contracts that were not renewed, right? You mentioned three contracts not renewed. So I wanted to understand which types of tenants did not renew, any pattern there, or if they were either shrinking their operations or they moved to different locations. So any color you could give on that front. And also, on the other hand, on the development pipeline, so 70% pre-lease, which is pretty good, definitely. Also, if you give similar question, some color on the types of tenants there are pre-leasing. So the bulk of the development pipeline is BTS, right? So which types of tenants? Is it driven by e-commerce, as you said, or is it new shoring that's driving the demand for the development pipeline? Thank you.
Gracias, Andre. Welcome for the thank you for being on the call. Basically, regarding your second question on the development pipeline, as it is in most of the cases, based on e-commerce projects. I'm sorry. You hear me well? Okay.
Yes.
So most of the cases, e-commerce operations in three of the cases. Well, actually, in two of the cases, one of them is the second phase of Mercado Libre in Guadalajara, and the other one is now Monterrey. The other one is a project for Pepsi in Puebla, so this is consumer goods, and the other ones are related to the auto industry, recreational vehicles, and the other one is related also to consumer goods expansion. So we're seeing a broad base of different industries, and I think looking forward, we're still going to be seeing a diversified industries in our growth pipeline. And regarding the projects that did not renew, it's interesting that first of all, these three contracts did go until treaty until expiration. They did pay on time until the last day. In one of the cases, they reduced their footprint, and they are still a kind of ours, and we extended the lease. And this is one building that we currently have in Toluca, which is a very strong market, and we feel comfortable that it will be leased. And the other two projects, one of them is related to logistics. It was a shorter term period. And the last one was a home appliance. A bit of proper operation. So we think that our companies are just being cautious on what they want to achieve. This is, in our opinion, this is a regular business cycle. We have to be open to whenever we receive buildings, let's have them ready as soon as possible so that we can be able to lease them up. And I am hopeful. I really think that we're going to be able to lease them up at attractive, in some cases, higher rents than they were previously in place.
Perfect. Very clear. Thank you, team. Good morning.
Gracias.
Our next question comes from the line of Anton Mortenkotter with GBM. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, guys. Thank you for taking my call. My question is related to the cash balance. Do you plan to repay all your debt anytime soon, or are you keeping it just like as gunpowder maybe to acquire a speculative building or something related to that? If you could provide some color on that aspect. Thank you.
Thank you, Anton, for the question. Look, our cash balance, we feel comfortable with our cash balance. As you know, we increase our debt, pulling the emergency lines to be ready to confront any situation given the pandemic.
We are not going to repay those lines. I need to have more data points of companies continue to pay on time. That has been the case for the last since the pandemic began. We will be cautious. I will keep the cash in house, and I don't feel the need to prepay those lines. The lines mature in a couple of years, so they are relatively low-cost lines. Incrementally, they don't add much to my expenses. So I think a cautious approach will be on order for the next at least for the next quarter. We'll take it from there.
Okay, guys, thank you. And respective to acquisitions or something like that, in the speculative sector, do you see yourself doing something like that anytime soon, or also continue with the pipeline you have already?
Look, as Loren mentioned, I think that I would like to underline the capacity of Vesta to shift the strategy as the environment changes. Right now, the environment calls us to be aggressive on pre-lease buildings, on build-to-suits, and we're going to continue to be cautious on spec development. I think that's prudent. You never go wrong to be prudent on a market like this one, and we will continue to be so. So that's what you can expect. Also, Loren underlined the strength of the return on cost that we're getting on build to suits, and that's very good. So I think that Vesta is as a flexible company. We have a flexible strategy, and we'll continue to adapt to the environment, no?
Okay, perfect. Thank you, and congrats for your results.
Our next question comes from the line of Francisco Suarez with Scotiabank. Please proceed with your question.
Hello, good morning. Thanks for taking my question. A brief question related with the returns that you may expect from e-commerce buildings. Do those any difference in the returns that you may get out of those investments? And secondly, on that regard, how competitive your locations are in the cities of Monterrey and Guadalajara to precisely attract more business on e-commerce, and what type of buildings do you think you may be attracting? Are we talking about fulfillment centers for the typical scale of those markets, or are we talking about last mile or complementary buildings? Thank you so much, and congrats for the results.
Gracias, Francisco. And definitely, I think that you might remember when we did the acquisition of the two plots of land in Guadalajara and Monterrey. This was part of our level three strategy, which was to enter certain markets where we believe we could have an advantage, particularly because of the quality of the project that we might develop. And this was the case in both projects. We acquired land to cater the logistics sector, the e-commerce sector, and very rapidly, in less than a year, we have been able to lease up, even before development starts, we were able to lease up four e-commerce projects. E-commerce projects in this case are being adapted to a really, I would say, generic logistic facilities, very much in line to the typical spec building we could develop. They normally require a good space for truck yards, for maneuvering areas, for higher buildings, but that was already a standard in Vesta. So basically, we have not really changed that much our strategy towards generic logistic facilities. E-commerce. Now, having said that, we believe that the returns that we still have to focus are in line to what we have been doing in the past. For both Guadalajara and Monterrey, returns are in the 10.5% to 11%. And I think that that's something that we want to keep the same discipline. We're learning from the sector. We're learning the different type of buildings that you just mentioned, last mile, sortation centers, fulfillment centers, and we need to understand which one will cater to each. And in this case, it's Guadalajara, it is a fulfillment center. It is, as I mentioned, it is the largest project for e-commerce being developed in Mexico for the moment. It's very impressive, and it even has an expansion area. So these are definitely long-term investments, and these are going to be strategic buildings for our clients in the e-commerce sector.
Interesting. Thanks for that wonderful answer. So that means that there's not much of TIs involved in this project, isn't it? So that is perhaps one of the factors that explain why returns are so similar with other typical players that you engage with.
You are correct. We regularly, I think, in both cases, it's mostly the generic part of the building with I wouldn't say no TIs, but let's say little tenant improvements, the basic tenant improvements. Very importantly, these buildings, the clients per se are doing huge investments inside of the facilities because they are going to include a lot of automation inside of their buildings, a lot of technology, and therefore I think it's a combination of what we develop as a shell building and what they are investing in not only in TIs but also in part of their operations. But yes, if you look at the numbers per square foot, they're pretty much in line to a generic logistics facility.
Perfect. Thanks so much, and congrats again. Take care.
Thank you, and I'll be glad next year at some point if the sanitary restrictions permit to invite you to the projects in Guadalajara and Monterrey, and they're really fascinating projects, and I'm sure that this is going to be a part of a great portfolio that we're developing of industrial parks in different markets.
As a reminder, it's star one to ask a question. Our next question comes from the line of Froylan Mendez with JP Morgan. Please proceed with your question.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for taking my question. So, Loren, where are you willing to do the big bets on land acquisitions? And what does this imply in terms of annual investment? And secondly, is there a big difference in the returns that you are able to extract given where land prices are today versus what you were used to in the past? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for being on the call. So land acquisitions are clearly part of the strategy of the company. Nevertheless, I think that land acquisitions, you have to do them on time so that you can really capture on the opportunities. I think that currently the opportunities that we're discussing, it's because we were able to identify where we wanted to buy land. We were able to negotiate, buy the land, and put the infrastructure in place so that we can be able to be awarded on this project, which, as you might know, there's high competition for this type of buildings. So I think that for us, being able to buy the land back in time is giving us a great competitive advantage. As of today, we feel comfortable with the amount of land that we currently hold in our portfolio. We currently have approximately 130 million dollars of land. We can keep expanding in markets. We have enough land to keep on developing in markets such as Querétaro. We still have land for Guadalajara. We still have land for even for Tijuana, where hopefully we might start another building soon because how hot the market is. So I think that we were able to buy enough land in many of these markets. There's some other areas such as Toluca where we have not been able to buy land. And in some cases, it's because land prices are not there where we think that we can achieve attractive returns. It's important to be in certain markets, but we believe that it's very important to be disciplined on the returns we might be looking at. We think that being able to develop a double-digit return on costs is a highly profitable and highly accretive for our shareholders. And as long as we find markets where we can be doing so, we're going to
be able to keep on developing. We want to be very cautious in certain last mile operations where land prices are way too high, returns are low, and even in some cases, the leases are in pesos. So we think that not all of the projects might, even that they might sound interesting, not add value for our shareholder base. And we are very prudent on where we invest our money, and that's why we're very careful and very selective on how we identify projects that can be accretive for the company, no?
Very clear, Lauren. Thank you very much.
Gracias.
There are no further questions in the queue. I'd like to hand the call back to Mr. Berho for closing remarks.
Thank you, operator. Our ability to continue executing our Level 3 strategy and remain a sector benchmark rests with Vesta's many employees across Mexico. I'm proud of my colleagues' continued perseverance as well as their commitment to Vesta, our clients, and each other during this period of great change and uncertainty. That spirit was clearly evident to me during the Vesta Challenge earlier in the month. And although our annual cycling race was conducted virtually this year, we raised over $65,000 for social investment projects in partnership with 11 other companies that participated in the event. That spirit, this perseverance and commitment, also gives me confidence in our ability as a company to lead from a position of strength and to act with agility and discipline for the benefit of Vesta's clients, our fellow shareholders, and other stakeholders. We remain vigilant to potential risks, but also to opportunities, keeping our eyes on the future and our 2024 goals. Thank you again for participating in our call today. Until our next one, please stay safe.
Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude today's teleconference. Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect your lines at this time, and have a wonderful day.